We are week two of our How to Tame Your Dragon, which, as people found out last week, and some of you are finding out this week, is about anger, dealing with anger. Last week, we talked about how anger is neither good nor bad, a shock to some people, but it's not, anger in itself is not sin. The way we handle anger can be sinful, but God gets angry, so we know that anger itself is not sin. So we talked about that last week, and today we're going to be talking about what drives you. And we're working with this definition of anger. This is from a book called Facing the Fire. It's a very good book on dealing with anger. Just warn you right now, it's not a Christian book. But anyway, this is his definition. I love this. He says, anger is the feeling we get when the world does not act the way we want to. So my question then becomes, well, where do these expectations come from? How do we end up growing up? And almost as a baby, we have certain expectations of life. And those expectations don't get met, and we get angry about it. Where are these expectations coming from? And that's what we're going to talk about today. What is driving you, and what continues to drive us? And so we're going to be talking about it today. I mentioned this briefly last week, and we're going to be talking about it in context of this guy. Some of you who've been following this saga know about him. He's our pet. He's a cross between a black German Shepherd and a black dragon. His name is Ninja. So we've been learning about this because we had some aggression issues with him, and so Victoria and I have had to kind of become dog trainers in amongst all of our other titles recently. And so we were looking into how do you train a dragon, and how do we kind of tame him and get rid of some of the anger issues we were having. Now, I'm not going to go through all this because I'm not trying to teach you how to train dogs today, but in dog training, they teach you that dogs have drives, and there's, you know, depending on who you talk to, anywhere between 5 and 12 different drives. Every dog has them. Some dogs have an exorbitant amount of them. Ninja has this entire list, plus about 13 not on here, but what you want when you want a dog that you can train is you want him to have a high drive in one of these areas at least, and a good trainer will use that in order to modify their behavior by giving them what they want, which is the drive, the thing that drives them. And some of you may think this is pretty crazy to start a sermon here. I don't know. Some of you are readers and some of you are dog lovers, so I'm going to throw this out there. I'm not going to spend any time on it, but there's a book called The Genius of Dogs that explains that dogs fit into our society because they have adapted to it, and these drives that these dogs have are not so dissimilar from drives that we have. And so that's what we're going to talk about. I'm going to parallel this to that. But in Ninja's case, he has prey drive through the roof. And I said last week, if I took a stake and threw it on the ground, and I took a ball and threw it on the ground, he'd chase the ball. And the most important thing in his life is chasing things. He loves it, his favorite thing. His pack drive is there, but maybe not as refined as it needed to be. So what Victoria and I have had to do is, it used to be I'd go play ball with him, or she'd go play ball with him. Now we go play ball with him because we want him to establish that within the pack. So we see we're starting to use drives here in order to shape behavior. And then, of course, the other thing is we teach him to behave before he gets to get what he wants, which is prey. It kind of looks like this.
Go.
Now, this is just a cell phone video, so you really can't, but he's literally quivering. Every muscle in his body is quivering to go, you know? And then when she finally says go, he goes. Because what he's learned is, in order to get what I want, I'm going to have to adapt to this behavior, and this helps establish things, and we're using this to shape his behavior. Here's the thing. You all have drives, too. And those drives are put into us by our Creator, and it was given to us for purposes, but the enemy knows our drives too. And he can use the drive to shape our behavior into bad areas, and this is why sometimes we make mistakes and we lose our temper, and later on we go, I don't even know why I got so angry. I don't know what made me do that. If you've ever been in that situation where I don't know what happened, well, the enemy has got a hold of your drives, and he's training you in the wrong way. So we want the Holy Spirit to lead us. We don't want the enemy to drive us. Now, I know everybody's thinking, well, this must be the easiest thing in the world for Pastor Grice, man. It must be easy being a preacher. All you have to do is take things that happen in your life and make a sermon about it. And I know that's what this looks like, but just, not that it matters, I guess, to anybody but me, but for the record, this that I'm about to give you was given to me in June of 2013, months before we opened Spirit Chapel. In fact, a couple months before I even knew we were going to open Spirit Chapel, back when Ninja was a little puppy. And I was sitting there on our deck, and I was doing my daily devotions, and I had the Bible open, and I had the dog there. And sometimes when you have the Bible open, you're just thinking about things in your life, things happen, connections start getting made. And I started wondering about this idea of drives and dogs. and I wondered, do we have drives? And I was taken to a verse, and it just kind of popped into my head. We'll go to this verse. And so I went to that verse, and it's this, then God said, let us make man in our image, according to our likeness. Now we know where this is, about everybody does. This is the sixth day of creation, right? So this is the very beginning of the Bible, Genesis. So we're in Genesis chapter 1 here, and we're about the sixth day of it. And he says, we're going to make him in our likeness, and let them rule over the fish, the sea, the birds, the sky, the cattle, everything, creeping and flying and swimming. And God created man in his image, male and female. God blessed them and said to them, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth and subdue it, every little thing that moves on the earth. Right? So this is a scripture. And when that scripture came out, I looked at it. It was like I saw instantly all these drives that pop out of it. Now, drives are for me a metaphor, right? And this is something that I believe God gave me to understand some things. And I'm giving it to you because I hope that you understand them too. There's nothing in the Bible that says we have these drives. But this scripture shows me certain things that we have built into our DNA. And because of our Creator, because of who He is, and because of what He instilled in us, we have these wired into our DNA. And we have to be aware of them because every one of these drives can be used by the enemy as well. And so that's why we're going to go through them a little bit here, one by one. First of all, is communion. Now, you could use different words for that, fellowship, brotherhood, those, you know, kind of things, friendships, deep friendships. But communion is the biblical word for it, because when we're in communion, it's a deeper relationship connection than just friendship. So there's something deeper about that. In this verse, in Genesis 1:26, when God is, you know, Moses is writing the scriptures here, he uses this term, let us make man. Now that's strange, isn't it? Because when we say God, we usually think God is a singular person. And then God says, let us. What's that? Why is God using the plural? Well, the word used for the Lord here, or God, actually, if you look at the Hebrew, is Elohim. And that means plural God. It could actually be translated gods. And it's oftentimes used in Hebrew to indicate the true God. And it's always used when the Bible's trying to tell us that the entire Trinity was there. And the Bible wants to let us know that at the beginning of the world, and a lot of people don't understand this, the entire Trinity was there. And we have scriptures that tells us this. The Spirit of the Lord was above the earth. John 1:1 tells us that Jesus was there and was there during creation. Of course, the Father was there. And so the entire Trinity's there. But the entire Trinity says, let us make man in our image according to our likeness. The number one likeness of the Trinity is they have communion with each other. So what they're telling us in this verse is that we were built to have communion. And we're built to have communion with God, but he made us male and female, so we're also supposed to have community with each other. And now sin's going to separate us, and so we still have communion with God, but it's kind of a vertical communion, and we're supposed to have fellowship with each other as well. That's what frustrates me when I have people tell me, well, I really don't need to go to church anymore because I can get all the sermons I need on my iPad, and I can listen to praise worship whenever I want when I'm driving my car, and I really have everything I need. I can pray to God. He hears me anywhere. You have all of that except you don't have communion. And community is supposed to be part of this whole thing, and we were created for that purpose. And what you'll find out is with each of these drives, if it's not working right, or if it's too high, if it's not there, or if it's too high, either one, you'll find a broken person. And we'll see this in a couple different ways. We'll talk about this more. So communion is the very first thing that kind of pops out of that. And Jesus even tells us this in John 17. Now, I want you to watch this verse because it's probably more significant than you realize. Jesus comes and he's praying. He's praying to the Lord. And he says this, I don't ask this on behalf of these alone. He's speaking about the disciples. But for those also who believe me through their word. So he is literally saying the people in Spirit Chapel in 2015. Because you're here because you believe in Jesus because of the words the disciples wrote and became the Gospels. So this verse is talking about you, right? He says, I want them that they may all be one, even as you, Father, are in me and I am in you, and that they may also be in us. And Jesus is saying, this is my prayer, that we're all one. We have a deep, deep, deep fellowship, deeper than anything you can imagine, and have this amazing communion amongst all of us. This is Jesus' prayer for you. This is Jesus praying for you. Jesus is praying this over you. This is what he wants for you. So the people who pull out of fellowship are going against their nature and going against God's design. We're supposed to be in fellowship. And the other thing that we see in this same verse is that we have this work-rest cycle. And I'm going to throw rest in there, although Genesis actually only talks about the work. But God says, let them rule over the fish, the birds, the cattle, and all the earth. When you're ruling over something, it's a job. Now, a lot of people think that work only came in the world after sin came in the world, but that's not right. It's just work really began to stink after sin comes in the world. Work became hard after sin came in the world, but we always had work. God always gave us a job to do, but he also gave us rest, which he tells us about later in Genesis, and which Jesus says to his disciples as well. Jesus says the Sabbath, that's the rest day, was made for man and not man for the Sabbath. So we have this cycle of work and rest, and we're supposed to have a cycle of work and rest. And whenever we don't have a cycle of work and rest, things go wrong. And I know people who are one or the other on this. I know workaholics, and they just work all the time. And it drives us all the time. Got to do it. And we just start doing things, and we're working 7 days a week. When we opened the church, that's what we were doing. We're working 7 days a week. I have a full-time job. So I didn't know how I could do it without this. And so for about a year, we ran 7 days a week. And that wears you out, and it makes you irritable. And you don't find time for quiet time anymore. You're not spending time praying. You're not relaxed anymore. You're just agitated all the time. I've never, ever known a workaholic who I'd call peaceful. Have you? I mean, we know workaholics. Would you ever describe them as laid back? Have you ever known a laid back? No, never see that. But here's the thing God tells us. He speaks to us when we're still. Be still and know that I am Lord. If we pack our lives with so much activity that we're never still, it's really hard to hear that small, still voice of the Lord. So we have a tendency sometimes to try to get ahead, and boy, we start off with the best intentions, but we get into this work cycle we never let go of. God made us to work and then rest. If you look at what God does, every time he creates something, he takes a pause and says, you know what? That's good. He goes on and does the next thing. That's good too. He works and he pauses. He works and he pauses. It's okay that you work and step back and say, you know what? This ain't bad. You know, I did it. And so the first time I ever saw this in my life was when I was younger, and I hated doing this, but it was kind of, I had this secret love for it. I was mowing the lawn. You know, I hated doing it because my parents would tell me to do it, and I hate doing anything they told me to do. But when I mow the lawn, there's a satisfaction, and those of you who do this, you know, because you go up and you come back and you see that nice, neatly trimmed row, right? And then you get to, so you're taking this really mangled thing and you make this neatly manicured lawn out of it, and it always smells so good. And I would love, when I was done mowing the lawn, I would never confess this to my parents because I didn't want them to give me more, but I would love just sitting there and look at that lawn and smell it. Wasn't that great? And it's like, this is great. We all have these cycles in our lives, and we're supposed to have those cycles in our lives. We're supposed to have a work and a rest cycle. You work too much, you're out of cycle. You're also out if you rest too much. I know a lot of people don't want to do any work. They want to sit around and do nothing all day long. You are not created to do nothing all day long. In fact, if you know people who do nothing, they're some of the most irritable people. You would think they'd be laid back, they'd just be, you know, great. No, they're like always looking for, they're bored. They're bored out of their minds, and they're dissatisfied with life. They're angry about things. They find things to get angry about. I remember when I worked right out of high school, I worked in a law firm. It's not as exciting as it sounds. I ran the Xerox machines. But the law firm is called Eckert Siemens Chairman Law. It's still there. It used to be the steel building downtown. And so I worked in office services. I worked with a whole bunch of characters. And this one guy just loved the rich. He was always talking about the rich, and a big Ayn Rand fan, if you know who she is. And so Mr. Eckert, who was the 80-year-old patron of the thing, had a birthday. And they announced it, and somebody asked this guy, are you going to get him a birthday present? You know, just, you know, messing with them. And he says, no, what do you get somebody who has everything? And this guy I was working with, he was a retired guy, turns to me and says, a gun with one bullet. And I thought, wow, that's like one of the most, but boy, it brings you up short. But that's the problem, right? If we just have nothing to do anymore, we just sit around. It's like, usually the idle rich, man, they're always in trouble. Look at what happens to them. So we're supposed to have this work, and we're supposed to have this rest cycle. We're supposed to have both. And then creativity. Let us make man in our image. Well, the only thing you know from that statement is that you're creative, because you were created in the image of a creative God. So you were born to be creative. That's about the only thing you could take away from that one. We know that we're born to be creative. You all were born to be creative. Some of you will say, well, not me. I don't have any creativity in me. Yes, you do. And please don't tell God that, because that kind of thing makes God angry. You know, when Moses was telling God what he could and couldn't do, you know, God says, he's quiet. He got angry. The Bible says the anger burned against Moses. Don't tell God that he created you wrong. It's like, oh, really? I created billions of people, and you're the only one that doesn't have any creativity. It's amazing to me, though, because we put creativity in a box. Well, singers are creative, you know, and so are writers, and, you know, graphic art. Those are creative, but not me. man, I know you people. There's some of the most creative people in the world. My wife will always tell me, you know, I wish I were creative. I could help you out. I said, you are creative. No, I can't do this stuff that you do. No, but this is just one form of creativity. We're driving down the road, and I look over. She's knitting, right? And so she's knitting a scarf for somebody. And the I don't know what thread or whatever you would call this that she's using to knit this is so thin, I can see the sun through it. It's like she's literally knitting with spider webs to me. I'm looking over there, and she's creating this thing, and she's telling me I'm not creative. Really? Because I couldn't do that. I've known mechanics who will tell me they're not creative while they're grinding a part and putting it into place because this part's no longer made. And you know, this is amazing. You know, people tell me they're not creative as they step out of a garden that they, you know, they took this dirt and they had this beautiful garden. It's amazing to me how people don't understand their own creativity. But you were born to create. God gave you creativity for a purpose. And one of those purposes is to create. This ties into that work and rest cycle. And one of the greatest tragedies going on right now in America is that we've taken a whole generation and been told them they don't need to be creative anymore. We've made them consumers instead of producers. Instead of using their creativity and working and having that work cycle to create things, they plug their headsets in and they zone out and they watch YouTube videos and they watch TV and Netflix and all these ways that we can stream content to them, and they're no longer creators. They're content to just being producers. That's why we have a whole generation of very dissatisfied young people, because they forgot they were supposed to create. We need to create. We need to work. Okay, I probably don't even need to go into this one because we kind of know this drives there, right? I mean, this kind of drives our society these days, and we know that's there. But God gave it to us. There's nothing wrong with sex. God gave it to us. It was a great idea. I love this be fruitful, multiply part. That's great. I love this that God gave that right in the very thing that he wired into us. Of course, we can take this the wrong way. Of course, we can let this drive us. I know people whose entire world is shaped by who and how they have sex. And that was never supposed to be. That was never supposed to define us like this. And then there's this one. Now, I know there are some people here who are control freaks, okay? I know that because I'm married to one of them. And we fight over this all the time, but I got to tell you, this is biblical. It's biblical that you want to have control. God says, fill the earth, subdue it, and rule it. And if that's not telling him to control, I don't know what it is. So it is in our nature to want to control things. It fights with other things in our nature. In fact, we have this natural tension in our house because my wife likes to control everything. She likes the system. She likes the system in place. As you might expect, I kind of operate a lot in chaos. And she's always reciting the New Testament to me that God is not a God of confusion. He says, you know, God's not, he brought order, so that's God. I said, yes, but God created the whole world out of chaos. You know, so we have this kind of back and forth on that a little bit, because a lot of times creativity does come from chaos, but either extreme is wrong, which is why God gave us both, right? He's supposed to be driving us into this. But when we lose control over situations, a lot of times is when we get angry. And a lot of people, even if they pretend like they don't care, they do. Like I've heard this expression, whatever. You know, it actually gets short to whatever, you know, whatever, whatever. You know, right? It is the dumbest thing because no one ever means it when they see it. No one ever says whatever, and they really mean it with a smile. They're usually accepting something they can't change. Whatever. You know, I'll do it because I can't stop it. Whatever. And you can feel it right there. It's there's anger there because I can't control it. I have no choice. You're bigger than me, or you own the grade book if you're a teacher, or you own the paycheck if you're a boss. Whatever. I guess I'll do it. You know, whatever. But they're never happy about it. We need to understand that we have a desire to control things. And then finally, and I'm out of Genesis now, I'm going to jump to one more verse. We were built to worship. This is Jesus talking in Matthew 21. He's reciting a psalm, and he actually, and we've talked about this here, he's tweaking that psalm a little bit. If you go look at the psalm, it doesn't quite say what Jesus says it says, because David got a little bit wrong, and so Jesus just corrects it for him. And here's what he says. Have you never read, out of the mouth of infants and nursing babies, you have prepared praise for yourself? He's saying Jesus and God, he said, when we created you, when you were a nursing baby, the littlest baby you can imagine, you were built to praise me. That's what he's saying. So I think we can say that if nursing babies worship God, we have that built into our DNA. We have the desire to worship in our DNA. But the enemy knows this, and which is why he gives us other things to worship. And the amazing thing that's happened in my lifetime is the enemy used to be quiet about that, but now he's bold as can be. It's almost offensive to me as a Christian how bold the enemy has gotten with this. That he has taken worship from God where it's supposed to be off of him and put it on other things. And we had our show, thank God it's ending this year, American Idol. It's like, man alive, can we just get right out there or what? You know, of course, if you go into the pornographic world, so there's all kinds of stuff about worshiping all the wrong things. But everywhere you look, I still don't know if you saw this, but NBC Sports has this commercial. Have you seen this commercial? They're helping you worship. But that's what the thing is. They show the hockey. And I love the Penguins, you know. I root for them. I feel awful when they lose, which means I feel awful a lot lately. But I don't worship them. I don't lift the Stanley Cup instead of, you know, the cross of Jesus. But the enemy's saying, no, you worship the Penguins. You worship the Steelers. And let me tell you something. A lot of people do. A lot of people do. Their whole life is geared around this idea that that is the most important thing in my life. And we're taught to worship them in our, you know, that's why, you know, when the rock stars run on stage, the audience goes wild. And all this stuff is we're worshiping. And he's even just bold about it. We're worshiping other things now. This is taking a drive that was built for a purpose and funneling it to something else. So we have to understand these drives are in us, and the enemy uses it to pull us out of God's will and God's desire. So where does it come back to anger? So let me bring this back. So all this is very interesting, but I thought we were talking about anger. Okay, this is what drives our expectations. The drives that are in us have created expectations of life. And when those expectations don't get met, we get hurt. And that's what happens. We get angry. So the path to anger kind of goes like this. Unmet needs become hurt. That's the first thing that happens. Whenever something that's being driven and we have this need in our lives that's not getting met, we get hurt. And from there is a very basic human response. It's not God's response, it's human response. In the animal world, they call it fight or flight. You may have heard that expression, fight or flight. Animals make that decision, fight or flight. The way it works in our world, it's anger or it's fear. When we're hurt, it develops either anger or it develops fear, and sometimes both. Sometimes we get angry and we realize there's nothing we can do about it, so it ends up creating fear in our lives. Now what happens is we stuff that down. Either way, we have a tendency because in order to get in and get along in society, we realize that we can't let these out. We can't let people know we're afraid of things. That's just a problem because then they'll use it against you. And we learn very quickly that some anger is not acceptable, and so we kind of stuff that down. But what's weird is it comes back out. And it's almost like you're taking dynamite sticks and throwing it in a pit. You're kind of trying to shut off the fuse, and you throw it in a pit, and you have this pile of dynamite there. It has not gone away. We talked about this last week, and we'll talk about it again next week. Anger is literally kinetic. They've measured it. You know, you can actually, it's a force. Anger is a force. And when you stuff it down, the force didn't go away. It just got stuffed down. And this is why when someone comes along and touches something, it sets off that powder keg that you didn't even know was there. You can get angry about the dumbest things. You know, why was I angry? And if you're honest with yourself, it wasn't about what you thought you blew up about. That's because we've stuffed this unmet needs, this hurt, this anger, and this fear down deep inside of us. And it comes up in the weirdest ways. This is, you know, going back to the idea of community, which is the communion and this fellowship that we're supposed to have. It's like the basic, most basic need that we possibly could have. And when we lose it, we have this thing called abandonment. And you all have it. I mean, you've all faced abandonment in your life. It came along at a very young age, probably at first, and that's why you cried. And then when you cry, your mom would pick you up, and it worked, right? So when you felt abandoned, you'd feel that anger and the fear, and you'd start crying. You'd express that anger, which is actually appropriate, especially at a young age. And your mother would come by and pick you up, or your dad would pick you up. And they'd feed you, they'd see what was wrong, and they'd take care of it. But sometimes you just felt lonely. You just felt abandoned. And you start crying. When you've seen this, babies wake up, and they're okay for a little while, and they realize I'm alone, and all of a sudden they start crying. They feel abandoned. They want that community. And the mother or the father comes in, picks them up, and it works. And it works, and it works. And until one day it doesn't work anymore. One day you were put down and never picked up again. How's that for a sad slide? I'm going to send you all out depressed today, right? But this happened to every one of us, you know, because it was at one point in time, you just put the kid down and they were too big to pick up. When Emily was a little girl, I used this little backpack. I'd put her on my back, you know, and we'd run around and she just loved it, you know. She wouldn't fit in that backpack. Now, when Stas came here, he was this little skinny 11-year-old kid. I could pick him up easily. He'd have to pick me up now, you know. There comes a time when we have to put them down and not pick them back up. But when that happens, you feel this abandonment. And we stuff that down because we're either fearful, we don't want anybody to know that. And that's not right, especially guys. I mean, we're taught we're not allowed to be afraid of things like that. You can't cry over things like that. And so we stuff it down. And we get angry about it, and we stuff that down too. But here's what's weird. It comes out. And so what happens to a person who never learns how to connect in the community, and as they start withdrawing from community, they get angrier and angrier about it. A lot of times they're doing it. A lot of times, you know, because they're afraid of rejection and afraid of connecting with people because they might find out something, they pull away themselves. They've done it themselves. But then they get angry about it. It's like, well, you did it, but it's just the way we work. And we stuff it down, and we stuff it down, and we stuff it down. And then one day, the kid felt so much rejection at school, he takes a high-powered rifle into a movie theater. This is how this happens. This is anger that just comes back up because it was never dealt with. It came back up. Or, you know, the person ends up making themselves a recluse and they just pull away from all of society. And they actually do things deliberately to make themselves less attractive so no one will come by and bother them. But what's happened is they've stuffed down fear and they've stuffed down hurt and anger over this feeling of abandonment. And it's happened to absolutely all of us. Now, what we've done in our society, because we want to make everybody feel better, is, you know, and if I were a pop psychologist, I'd have all stand up and do a group hug or something, you know, make you feel better, oh, there, you know, and you feel better now, you know, because you feel abandonment. We're not going to do that here. C.S. Lewis had a great quote. He says, if you look for truth, you might get comforted in the end, but if you look for comfort, you will neither get comfort or truth. You only have soft soap and wishful thinking in the beginning, and in the end, you'll get despair. So we're going to look at this honestly, and we're going to look at this truthfully, and that's what we're going to do next week, because we're about done here today. I know, I keep promising you that we're going to get to how to handle this stuff, and we're going to push it off one more week. But we're going to deal with this honestly, and we're going to deal with this truthfully. Because the truth is, yes, one day your parent put you down and never picked you back up, and yes, that hurt. But that's something that hurts a child, not an adult. You know, and if you think that you wanted to get through all of your life without pain, and that's what's making you angry, you need to know something about that.
Life is pain, Highness. Anyone who says differently is selling something.
We're not selling anything here today. You know, there's pain in your life. You're going to deal with it. And we need to deal with stuff as adults, not as children. But here's the best part. We have a God. And He knows our hurts. He was watching. You know, the Bible says He captured your tears in a bottle. He remembers everything about you. And this verse is about the Messiah. This is Isaiah proclaiming the Messiah. He's describing Jesus before Jesus gets here. And he's speaking as God. He says, "Behold my servant, I have put my spirit upon him. He will bring forth justice to the nations." I love this part. "A bruised reed he will not break, a dimly burning wick he will not extinguish." Have you ever been by a creek and you'd seen one of those reeds that was broken and is hanging by a thread? He's saying, "I can pick that up and it won't break." He's saying, "I can pick up a candle that has no discernible heat to it, and I will make sure it doesn't lose its flame." He's just that good. So a lot of times, because of the hurt in our lives, we don't want to bring it to God. You know, we're afraid of bringing it to God. We're afraid of what He'll do. And see, here's what I'll do. I'll pick it up, and I'll hold it in my hands until you're strong enough. I can take this. You can bring me your hurt. You can bring me your anger. You can bring me your fear. It's okay. I've got this. See, this is the purpose, he says. This is the communion that I built you for. Me, he says, that's me. I will do that. I will not hurt you. You can trust me. No matter how bad the pain is, you can trust me. I don't know if you've ever been in a situation where you hurt yourself and someone wants to look at it and you won't let them, you know. That happens a lot when I was a kid especially. Get away, get away, get away. But he's saying, you can trust me. I will not hurt you. And then in Matthew, he comes and Jesus is praying again with his disciples and talking to him. And he says, "Look, all authority has been given to me in heaven and on earth." And he says, "There, go for, therefore, and make disciples of all the nations." That's you. "Teaching them to observe all I've commanded you." And then he says this, "I am with you always, even to the end of the age." He says, "I will pick you up and not hurt you. I will never put you down again." This is our Heavenly Father. And he's saying, it's okay, you can bring me your hurt, you can bring me your anger, you can bring me your fear, because God's in the healing business. So we're going to talk about appropriate ways of getting this stuff out, we're going to talk about identifying it, but at the end of the day, we have to bring it to God. We also have to bring it to each other, because he has a built-in healing cycle, that's why he created community, so it's partly bringing it to each other, but we're bringing it to God. He says, "I can do this, don't worry about it, a smoldering wick will not go out." in my hands, I will heal you. Would you all please pray with me?